is Michael Philippi. I'm Deputy County Counsel for Monterey County, and I represent the defendant, Valentine Rodriguez. We've asked the court to look at the district court's decision with regard to a decision in motion to summary judgment. We're contending that the district court erred in the analysis when it looked at the question of the qualified immunity. The court seemed to stop at the decision of saying, well, there's a dispute factually as to whether or not we can say as a matter of law there was excessive force, or there was a reasonable length of detention, or there was a Fourth Amendment violation in search of a wallet. The next step in that analysis with regard to qualified immunity would have been to say, okay, we're going to give the plaintiff the benefit of the doubt on the questions with regard to fact, which is the standard for summary judgment review. But then we have to look at would a reasonable peace officer say, I believe my actions fall within the law. To do that, you also have to look at whether or not the law is clearly
defined. Why wouldn't the answer here have been no to that question? I mean, there was no report of a crime, certainly no crime of violence.
There's a 911 call of a suspicious person inside the house.
Suspicious person inside the house? I mean, that's not a crime.
No, but it's not a crime, but...
Inside the house, right?
Well, the point is, an officer's going to respond to a 911 call. You get some...
Certainly respond to a 911 call. But the fact that somebody makes a 911 call doesn't enhance the facts in any way. The fact of the matter is, the call said some nothing that looked like a crime. Just some guy outside the house, the way you and I might be around our houses, right? And then goes in, there's absolutely nothing like that. And then that officer approaches Mr. Aquino, and he does nothing suspicious. He does nothing illegal. There's no evidence of anything like that. And then the next thing he knows, Mr. Aquino is on the ground losing consciousness. I don't know why you're here. Why are you appealing in this case? I'm a little baffled.
Because the district court didn't complete the analysis with regard to...
Well, court didn't complete it. I just don't see whether it's to complete. I mean, you know, your officers shouldn't be violent here attacking people outside their own houses. And I'm sticking them. I'm talking. I mean, you want to just waste your time?
No, I don't want to waste my time.
Well, that's what you're doing.
We're here on de novo review, so it doesn't really matter what the district court said exactly. What matters is whether your clients are actually entitled to qualified immunity. And so far, you haven't told us why they are.
All right. I mean, you spent a lot of time talking, but you really haven't come up with nothing.
Under qualified immunity, if the law is not clearly established, the officer's given the benefit of the doubt. If a reasonable officer can't believe his or her actions fall within the law, even if they're mistaken.
Well, you do know what the law is, what you haven't told us, what it was that the reasonable officer saw that would have justified knocking down Mr. Aquino and then locking him up in a police car for half an hour. What is it? I mean, stop talking.
All right, so
already halfway through your argument, you haven't come up with a single thing.
He responds to a 911 call. He's directed to the house, which was also identified in the 911 call. He goes on the property. As he's determining whether or not there's any signs of forced entry, someone inside the house closes the blinds. He decides at that point he's at risk. He's going to withdraw. Someone from the house comes out that matches the 911 call individual. And
asks if he needs help, right? I mean, what criminal comes out and asks the police what they need?
Well, if you're trying to divert the attention of the officer so your compatriots can get away or a little child can be slaughtered in the back bedroom, that's a perfectly good way to defer that person's attention away.
Well, why isn't it to do if you really think that there are criminals inside and there's crime going on, why wouldn't the reasonable officer call for backup?
Backup was on the way.
And wait for backup? just to deal with the situation rather than physically attacking a homeowner outside of his own home.
Well,
if it happened to you, would you feel this was justified?
If it happened to me, I would have given him my identification. No, the officer or the individual pulled out a wallet and pulled out a card and held out a card that said, this is my identification. The officer tried to inspect that identification. He withdrew it. So under the totality of the circumstances, the officer's...
Withdrawing the identification is a justification. I mean, there's nothing legal. I mean, the officer can look at the ID in his hand, does this take it?
He wasn't given that opportunity.
He could say, let me take it.
Well, he held out his hand, implying, let me have a look at the ID, and instead the individual withdrew the ID. And under the totality of the circumstances, the officer at this point has reason to suspicion.
So he was not here now because he was through your ID?
Well, he was not.
I can't believe you're scared of me to hear an argument.
I believe that he is entitled to...
And what justifies him putting on in the police car for half an hour?
He was in the police car for less than half an hour, but even if he was in the police car for half an hour, the courts have already determined
that. I'm sorry, let's just focus on that. He says half an hour.
Okay.
And you said you give the plaintiff the benefit of doubt as to the facts, right?
As to the violation, yes.
Well, as to all facts. I mean, if that dispute is facts, we have to assume plaintiff's facts.
Okay.
So why are you arguing with me when I say half an hour, you say it was less than that? Well, what is the significance of doing that?
Well, the courts have said, and there is a case directly on point where the court has said 25 minutes is not an excessive amount for a detention.
But he says it was half an hour, so don't we have to give him the benefit of the facts at this stage in the litigation?
There are other cases that you can go farther than that. Let's say you can be put in a police car, you can be transported across town, and presented for identification with somebody else.
So my question is, I said half an hour, and you disputed that. You must have had some reason for doing it, some justification. We have to accept, for purposes of this appeal, it's half an hour.
Okay.
Not okay. Yes or no?
Yes.
Okay, so why did you dispute this? Why when I said half an hour, did you think it was appropriate at this level, in this argument, to dispute the half an hour?
My apologies.
I'm asking you why did you do it? What is the significance of it?
There is a CAD report, which is generated by an...
I'm sorry?
A CAD report. It's a radio transmission. It logs the radio transmissions from the point of the 911 call to the point that the entire situation is cleared, and that shows that it was less than half an hour.
So you want us to dispute? You want us to...
That was my error, Your Honor. I apologize.
Counsel, I want to ask you about what the district court characterized on page 9 of the opinion, the extended physical seizure, and you didn't refer to it by name, but I know you know the case, the Galagos case.
Yes.
And the district court did cite it several times in the opinion. And what I want to know is, do you think the district court judge can give proper weight to the Galagos case or misapplied it in some way?
I think the court didn't give it proper weight. I think that in that situation, you had an individual who, as I referred to, is stopped, transported across town for a lengthy period of time, is in handcuffs, was stopped at gunpoint, and was determined not to be the individual who was trying to break into the house, so was transported back to his vehicle, which took a substantially longer period of time, was a substantially more intrusive stop, and yet the court said that that's not a violation of the Fourth Amendment. And here we've got a situation where an officer responds to a 911 call. It's not his decision to make the stop. He responds to the 911 call. An individual that matches the description shows up out of the house. There's an exchange. He's told he's being detained. And then he resists the detention. At that point, it's no longer a detention. It's a resisting arrest situation. The officer then...
I'm sorry, why was he being detained? I lost track of that.
So that the officer could complete the investigation as to whether or not he was actually the renter of the home.
Because this is after he knocked him out?
This was before they had the confrontation.
And what did he do that was in
sorry, I'm saying here, he didn't walk away. He didn't walk away. He didn't, I just wonder, what is it that justified putting him in the police car? I mean, he says you're detained, okay, and you, does it do something that's inconsistent with being detained?
The officer wants to place him in handcuffs for his safety because his backup has not arrived at that point. The individual resists being handcuffed. And so at that point, he says.
That's a fact that's good too, isn't it? He says he just fell.
And he says he was dragged to the ground. So if you.
No, but I think he disputes that he resisted being handcuffed, doesn't he? I thought he did.
He said he was in that list of lies.
Okay, so again, why are you doing this? Why are you arguing after you concede, after you state the, and we understand the legal framework, that we accept the plaintiff's facts, we have to accept the plaintiff's facts? Why are you now arguing things on the other side as inconsistent with that? Is that professionally appropriate? Is that being candid with the court?
I believe that the analysis for qualified immunity still requires the court to make a finding that says the officer was not reasonably justified in
believing his actions. Well, we have to accept the facts on the ground as plaintiff alleges them. And plaintiff says, I complied. Why are you arguing he didn't comply? Why? How can you stand there?
I'm not saying
as an officer of the court. And I'm sorry.
I'm not saying he didn't comply.
Well, you just said exactly that. You know, this is on tape.
Okay.
Okay, so you should go back and look at it, and I think you should have your supervisor look at this. Understand?
I do.
I'm directing you to. Who is your supervisor?
This is Lynch.
I couldn't hear you.
Susan Lynch.
Susan what?
Lynch, B-L-I-T-C-H.
Okay, you will ask her to watch this argument and see whether making the kind of argument you do is important, she thinks it's appropriate.
Okay.
Okay. We'll hear from the other side.
May I please record?
Is it always like that?
My name is Nina Pitani. I'm here for Plaintiff Appellee Nicholas Aquino. I'm very moved by some of what I heard today. This is kind of frustrating. It is our position that appellant's appeal is frivolous and serves only to delay justice to plaintiff Appellee.
Are you seeking attorney's fees for that appeal?
We are. My reasons for stating so is that jurisdiction is defective, as explained more fully in Appellee's brief for a variety of reasons, including that the district court found that there were disputed facts that required assessment by a jury, and it would be therefore premature to make the final decision on qualified immunity. I think the court also implied that if it accepted all of the facts in plaintiff's favor, it would not find this officer's conduct reasonable. I don't believe there's jurisdiction at this stage, and I don't think there's jurisdiction to assess the search of the wallet claim because I think that issue was waived.
I'm having trouble understanding the jurisdictional argument. I mean, they're entitled to accept plaintiff's facts. I realize they don't do that, but they're entitled to accept plaintiff's facts as they still say there is no disqualified immunity. And we have jurisdiction to hear that. I don't understand how you can argue there's no jurisdiction.
Well, I think that's a good point, Your Honor, and I think there's.
It's really more of a question.
It's a question? Okay.
I mean, how can there not be jurisdiction? I mean, we can say they're wrong, and I think they are wrong myself, but the fact that they are wrong doesn't deprive us of jurisdiction.
Well, I think in ACT UP v. Portland and in Johnson v. Bay Area Rapid Transit, two Ninth Circuit cases, and also in Johnson v. Jones, which is a U.S. Supreme Court from 1995, there is an indication that an interlocutory appeal on a denial of qualified immunity that was based on disputed facts in the categories of what the officer believed or perceived, and in the category of what actually transpired between the they were more appropriately decided by a jury. So your opposing counsel has made such arguments and then muddles this up, but to the extent he's also arguing that assuming plaintiff's facts, there would be qualified immunity, which I think probably charitably read his briefs also argue, we have jurisdiction over that type of argument, don't we?
Sure. I mean, I think
that... It's probably a loser, but not a matter of jurisdiction.
Okay.
You wanted to take a victory anyway you can.
I think that the jurisdiction issue for us is more something that we thought contributed to our sentiment that this appeal was ill-advised. It was just one more reason it was ill-advised, because there are indications that jurisdiction is premature.
I think Mr. Filippi is coming around to the appeal.
Okay. And then the second reason we think the appeal is frivolous is that the law setting forth legal parameters for a Terry stop has been very well-developed, well-settled, and clearly established by this circuit in addition to other circuits.
So can I ask you a question about that? So I really only have one question for you that I'd like you to help me with, which is this Gallegos case. I think you could distinguish your case from Gallegos such that maybe we could say there is a constitutional violation here when there wasn't in Gallegos, but I'm having trouble understanding why Gallegos doesn't create enough uncertainty in the law to have there be qualified immunity on the investigatory stop part of your case. You have a lot of other claims, but on the one part about whether the police could detain him for long enough to figure out if he was the right person or wasn't a criminal, it seems like Gallegos was very broad in saying what police could do to investigate something and detain someone in the meantime, and I wonder if it creates enough uncertainty in the law that there would be qualified immunity on that claim.
And I don't think it does, Your Honors, because Gallegos is one of dozens of cases that talk about when an officer may exceed the traditional parameters of a Terry stop.
So can you point to a case that has facts that are more similar to this one than Gallegos? Because Gallegos is somewhat similar.
Actually, it's not similar. In Gallegos...
Okay, can you point to another case in Gallegos that will help me see why you think they can't stop him like this?
Why they can't stop him? Johnson v. Campbell would be the best. It's out of the Third Circuit.
Okay, how about this court?
This court would be... U.S. versus Delviso, U.S. versus Ricardo D. Washington v. Lambert, U.S. v. Miles, United States.
Tell me why you think they're more similar to the facts here than Gallegos.
Yes, because in cases, all of the cases where intrusive means have not been allowed are more like this case. In other words, Delviso. Delviso involves a case where a car is pulled over and the suspects are ordered out at gunpoint. Delviso is ordered out at gunpoint, told to get on the ground and cuffed.
And had there been a tip, kind of a 911 call in Delviso?
Delviso, the suspect had been under surveillance for drug trafficking. And in Delviso, the court found that those tactics constituted an arrest because they exceeded the bounds of Terry.
So in Delviso, there was more than a tip. There was evidence of an actual specific crime.
They had been surveilling Mr. Delviso because they thought he was part of a drug trafficking program. And when they pulled him over, they ordered him out of the car at gunpoint. I think told him to get on his knees to the ground and cuffed him. The court found that was a de facto arrest. That was not a Terry stop because there was no indication that Mr. Delviso was armed, there hadn't just been a violent crime. There wasn't information suggesting that he was about to commit a violent crime. There was no information that he was carrying a weapon. And because we did not have...
I'm looking at Delviso, so I apologize for not remembering exactly, but it seems like the Delviso issue was, it says, there was no evidence suggesting that Delviso was particularly dangerous, especially once he had stepped out of the van, had been frisked, and was lying on the ground. So I'm not sure the court thought it was improper to stop him. The issue was just that after that, they drew their weapons.
They did not think it was improper to stop him.
So how does this help you with the seizure of your client here for some time while they investigate? I mean, know what, but
there is no authority that I have found in this case, this circuit's precedent or any other circuit's precedent, that allows a citizen to be stopped and held just because an officer needs to investigate something.
Except that's kind of, I mean, isn't that what happened in Gallegos?
Well, no. Gallegos was a situation where the officers made a mistake. A violent crime had occurred, first off, and minutes later, the officers in a chopper see a man walk out of the victim's home, or near the victim's home, get in a car and flee. The man matches the description of the man who tried to break into the house. So the officers have reasonable suspicion to stop the person. There's been a report by a victim of an actual crime, a violent crime. Somebody's trying to break into my house. I have a restraining order against them. I fear for my life and limb. After that report, the officers who are overhead see a man matching the description flee in, I think, a pickup truck or a vehicle.
He's not fleeing, right? It turns out he's not even the person.
Not even
the
driver.
He's driving away.
The crime is actually reported, and it's a crime that is life and limb. So, the officers have reasonable suspicion that criminal activity is afoot. They think this man is part of it. So they stop him, and they stop him by ordering him out of the truck at gunpoint. He complained, not that this wasn't a proper Terry stop, he complained that those were excessive measures because I'm not armed, I'm not even the right guy. I think what the court was saying is, well, there had just been a violent crime. You were believed to be the right guy. You were believed to be fleeing, and these beliefs were all reasonable.
So I think you're making a good argument about why we can say there's a constitutional violation in this case, but not, I mean, even though there wasn't in Gallegos. But isn't it close enough that a police officer could think Gallegos meant that they could stop someone while they investigate, especially if they don't draw their guns? I mean, it's at least... it seems at least arguable to me, which I think is what qualified immunity is about.
I don't think so, Your Honor, because I think Gallegos is taken out of context. There are too many cases authored by this court that lay out the parameters for proper Terry stop.
Isn't one of the distinguishing facts of Gallegos that this man is outside his own house?
Sure. Yes.
So this is not somebody that's on a highway or on a street or kind of in a car. At that point, what they do is they can get behind the wheel and drive off.
Did they know, though, at this point that he was that it was his house? I mean, they were following him, except that someone...
He came out of the house, right?
He was seen crossing the street and entering a vehicle right outside of the subject house.
But in your client's case?
In my client's case, it's not even a report of crime. In my client's case, you have a third party...
But he is seen coming out of the house.
My client?
Yes.
Yes, Your Honor. He is seen coming out of his house after having...
It's not a highway situation where you're going to hit a highway and he's got a vehicle. But is there a vehicle involved?
There's a vehicle involved in Gallegos.
In this case?
No. No. There is no...
So it's not like you can say he's about to drive off. He's about to...
There is not a single scintilla of evidence that my client is attempting to flee or leave. Not a scintilla. There's not a scintilla. He was attacked because he did not place the contents of his right hand, which was his military ID and his wallet, into the palm. This was done. He didn't do this. And he got attacked. And my point is that Gallegos bears no similarity.
Right. But we're talking about the detention after the attack. We got the attack, and that's one issue. And then he gets placed in the police car, right? Then he's left in handcuffs. Are there any further facts that justify that?
No, because all intrusive means, any intrusive mean on a Terry stop, has to be justified.
He's not getting up and running away.
Right. Right. So all intrusive means on a Terry stop have to be justified by the Washington versus Lambert factors or by other factors that maybe haven't been developed yet that contribute to a reasonable belief that the officer or some other party, that the safety is threatened or that the person is going to flee. There's just no justification on a Terry stop for handcuffs, force, or restraint outside of specifically identifiable circumstances that put the officer's safety at risk or somebody else's safety. Like in Gallegos, I think the court did not elaborate a lot because I don't think they saw it as a, court call, as a close call. And I think appellant relies a lot on dicta. But Gallegos did involve a situation where somebody, the victim caller, was feeling threatened for life and limb and said their restraining order was violated and she thought her father was going to try to hurt her. So there was a sense that this person, the suspect, and yes, was misidentified, but they don't know that, that this person is a threat to not only potentially the officers, but to this victim. So Gallegos is just that I think the appellant's reliance on Gallegos shows how little authority there is for their position because it is not remotely close to these facts. Is that enough or shall we continue? We're out of time. Oh, okay. Okay, well, thank you, Your Honor.
Mr. Philippi, I see that the county counsel, Charles McKee, will have him watch out in this one.